Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee and you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly.
When it comes to style and luxury, eBay gets it. They're making sure the things that you love are checked by experts. Not just any experts, specialized experts. Real people who love this stuff with real hands-on authentication experience.
So when you see that shiny blue checkmark that says Authenticity Guarantee, shop with confidence. Every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is verified authentic through a detailed inspection. That's how you know that eBay's got your back.
Because when you finally step into those sneakers, put on that watch, get your real gold glow up, swing that handbag over your shoulder, or step out in that streetwear, you'll realize that feeling is unlike any other.
With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Fat Mascara. I'm Jen. Jess is here for this interview as well, but I'm just popping on first to give you a little background on our guest, Amy Odell. So this interview is a culmination of a discussion we've been having for quite a while here at Fat Mascara, you know, about the evolution of media, the intersection of fashion and beauty culture, and the biggest theme, you've heard us harp on this endlessly, how celebrities have infiltrated the beauty worlds. So Amy is a journalist and the author of Anna, the biography, a deeply researched book about Anna Wintour and her rise to fame at Vogue. She's also worked at BuzzFeed and Cosmopolitan. Her work has appeared in New York, Time, Bloomberg, Businessweek, and others. And Jess and I are huge fans of her Substack newsletter, Back Row, which Amy calls an ad-free fashion and culture newsletter that publishes what legacy media can't. We asked her on the show to discuss some of the topics she's been writing about and to have her turn her sharp analysis and critical eye on the beauty industry for a minute. So let's get into it. So Amy, hi, welcome. We started talking immediately as soon as we got online. I don't want our listeners to miss out on any of this, so let's get right into it. You're a fashion journalist, but also a pop culture commentator and someone who watches the evolution of media really closely. What would you say are the biggest influences shaping how we see beauty and fashion today?
So I think the 2010s were the era of Instagram and social content, and I think the 2020s are the era of TikTok, short-form video, and individual voices like me, who is writing their own Substack. And content consumption is really going to newsletters dramatically away from websites, and I think media brands. So I think it's going to be a hard decade for those legacy media brands, although they've had a lot of hard decades in recent years.
I definitely agree. And I think that puts a lot more power right in the, and it feels like a lot more, it feels like a more democratic era.
Yeah, I think so. And then, you know, I think of my consumption, my media consumption habits, and I'm not a normal consumer of media, but I do enjoy fashion. I enjoy reading about fashion. I enjoy talking about fashion. And I find that I just love fashion TikTok. And I realize that's not an original point of view, but there are some really distinct, fascinating voices on there. And I think that short form video is a really great way to critique a fashion show. There's a lot of people doing runway recaps and fashion criticism on there. And I think it's a great way to do it because you can look at the clothes while someone is talking about them. And it's just, it's so much more efficient than reading a review. I still enjoy reading reviews, but I'm totally happy to like follow these people who are doing this commentary, doing these reviews. I get lost in it. I look forward to knowing what they have to say about a show.
Who are some of these people? Like, who are your big follows?
So at Relax, It's Only Fashion, Timothy is really great.
Oh, he's a delight.
He's so good. And, you know, I was watching one of his videos the other day and my husband, who doesn't have any interest in this stuff, was listening just like next to me overhearing him talk. And he was like, you know what? That's actually a really smart review. So he's really good at it. There's Mandy Lee. She's at Old Loser in Brooklyn. She's a trend forecaster. And she talks about
yes,
that.
Yes, we learned about vabbing from her.
Yeah, she's great. Who else? I recently became really into Taylor Wang, who has kind of a no-holds-barred approach. Like, he will say that he thinks the Fendi show was really bad, but, you know, when he loves something, like, he gives 10s where 10s are due.
And are a lot of these people not connected to fashion, i.e. they don't have anyone, you know, to beholden to?
I mean, they are connected to fashion, you know, because they're talking about it and it's their thing.
No, I mean, like, they're not, no advertisers.
The old advertising model.
No lunches to go to.
Oh, yeah. I mean, they do have advertisers. Like, I mean, on TikTok, I see them do sponsored stuff, which, you know, is great because I think people should get paid for all this work that they do for social media. So I applaud these people who get those deals. But yeah, they are really beholden to themselves, that said, and, you know, whatever they want to do with their business. And yeah, so it is different than when you're working at a magazine and you've got to go to, like, I don't know. Gosh, I'm trying to remember things that we had to do when we worked at magazines that you don't have to do when you're independent. Yeah, they don't have to go to the lunch or the launch party or they don't even have to go to the fashion shows. They don't have to go because they have the runway slideshows that they can use that are, you know, enough. They have the videos that they can use, which are also helpful for the audience to see. So yeah, they don't have to go anywhere. They don't have to like be embraced.
Yeah. So what's your perception of fashion journalism and beauty journalism like in comparison? Like, you know, you have a really interesting spot because you have worked at, you know, so many different titles and you've been able to kind of look at both in context. Like, what do you think is different and what do you think is the same? They are very different beats.
Yeah, they're really different. I think that beauty, you know, beauty is more mass than fashion. You know, if you look at just the luxury end of the market, even luxury beauty, it's much more mass because often that's the entry point for customers into a brand. Like, if I can't afford anything from Prada, maybe I will buy a Prada fragrance, or I think they just came out with something else. Didn't they just come out with a beauty line? Am I imagining that?
They used to have a beauty line, but there's talk of another one.
Okay. I just got a press release of images of celebrities at a Prada party. Maybe it was a fragrance thing.
Yeah, they have fragrance. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's much more mass. So I think it can be a little bit, I don't know what the right way to say it is. I don't know if it's easier or less frustrating from a coverage perspective, because often if you can't get into a brand any other way, you can get in through beauty. Because those products are more mass and, you know, luxury fashion is so much more expensive. Fewer consumers are able to buy it and enjoy it. And I think brands are more protective of their fashion adjacencies than their beauty adjacencies.
Yeah.
So I think that changed the dynamic of how it's covered. And certainly a lot more outlets are going to be able to cover, get some sort of inside track on beauty, I think, than fashion.
What about on some of like the more current issues, though? Like, I couldn't help but think in your last post or recent post, you said, why hasn't fashion canceled Kanye West? I think beauty has done a really good job or has made a really good effort in certain topics like inclusivity, like, you know, size inclusivity, more progressive issues.
Shade inclusivity.
Inclusivity for sure, at least for the past, like, you know, 7-8 years. And I thought about your post and I'm like, you mentioned fashion. I haven't really heard beauty talk about it, but it's not really a beauty situation it was a fashion show. And I thought, like, how would beauty handle that? I don't know. It's kind of, I'm arguing a little bit like in the absurd. It's really hypothetical, but I'm just curious.
No, think about like Dolce & Gabbana. Like that perfume is still selling well. Yeah. And some people have an issue with
them. But I mean, like, I mean, you don't have to speak to that issue necessarily, but I'm just like,
no, it's just giving an example.
Yeah. I'm curious like how you think beauty compares with fashion and like a little bit like culturally.
Or Johnny Depp.
That was a great post that you wrote.
Yeah. I think that beauty and fashion have the same problems. You know, the fashion industry, and you follow beauty more closely than me.
Yeah.
I'm hearing you say that the beauty industry is doing this too, which is representing more diverse people in marketing mm-hmm. images, right? And in the products that they offer. And I think that's good and that's important and that should continue and we should applaud, mm-hmm. you know, when the industry makes important changes like that so that they keep doing it. However, you know, if you look at who's running luxury fashion brands or fashion companies in general, that's not a diverse group of people.
Not really.
You know, there's maybe one or two more people since the social justice movement caused people to think more deeply about this in 2020. Mm-hmm. But it's not a diverse group of people. And I think that's a problem. And also, you know, who's getting money to start beauty lines? Who's getting money to start product lines in general?
Let's talk about it. It's celebrities. What's up with that?
Yeah, it's celebrities. I mean, I would like to see it, you know, a truly diverse group of founders and business leaders in fashion and beauty. And it's funny, I wrote about Aloe Yoga recently, and it's mm-hmm. like that is a brand run by these very wealthy white men.
I actually don't understand Aloe. I've never experienced like the brand. I don't know. I don't really know.
I did call them out for being hypocritical, but I've bought their stuff and I like their stuff actually. And I wear a lot of that stuff because I work from home and mm-hmm. I don't have to get dressed to go to a workplace. And I do like their stuff. Mm-hmm. I'm almost like embarrassed to say after I took them down, but I'll be honest. But yeah, I mean, my issue with these companies, and like I talk about this in my newsletter a lot, is like, they claim that they have these values because they know that Gen Z and, you know, millennials too are really interested in supporting companies that have values. However, if you just really like do like an hour of research, you can kind of quickly see that they don't really embody those values.
Right.
So I think it's healthy to call people out for that kind of thing. Corporations for that kind of thing.
Totally.
And let's not pat our beauty back here, Jess, because there are the same things going on in beauty. The parallel being like, I'm clean or this is eco-friendly because it's refillable. And then you're like, wait, there's a case on the outside that I didn't even need. So why does the refill
and they've made inside, 45 SKUs that were not necessary that year.
Amy, like other than the parallels that we're talking about, they're in the beauty industry as well. I want to know your take on the values don't line up with what the marketing says. Have you seen that in the beauty industry? But also the celebrity beauty lines. You know, I can't think of a lot of fashion examples other than Victoria Beckham, the Olsons, Rihanna. But like, there's not like in beauty with all these celebrity lines. So what do you think of the celebrity beauty lines?
I think that celebrity beauty lines are often the quintessential example of values not matching operations, you know? And I sort of wrote takedowns of a lot of them and I stopped because it was kind of like, how many can you really say the same things about? I was kind of boring myself with it, but it's like, I don't know, which one do you guys want to talk about? We could talk about ScarJo. We could talk about Jennifer Aniston. Nicole Kidman has
You had issues with those lines, yeah?
Well, it's just if you read them, they're so blatantly hypocritical. I think it's truly hard to come up with a beauty product that is not being made. Are we missing anything? You know,
We don't know yet. Certainly not a moisturizer.
Yeah. Like when Kim Kardashian's skincare line came out, that's SKKN or skin.
Yeah.
Skin. Yeah. You know, and she's saying I remember it being marketed and I don't have the exact language in front of me, but I remember it. I think memory of marketing is important. I do remember it being marketed as like a simple routine that was sustainable, like meaning for the planet, not just like the individual woman or person who would be using it.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to say it included like 8 or 9 products. Mm-hmm. And Kim did some interviews where she was talking about how, you know, her routine is that she kind of like uses all of these products every day, or she uses like 5 of them every day or something. And I, you know, that to me is not like an easy routine. It's not an inexpensive routine. And I think one of the sustainability attributes she was touting is that like you can refill your containers instead of like buying whole new containers every time. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But you know, like you're still getting the product shipped to you. I don't remember if you were like, I don't think you were mailing it and getting something mailed back. I think they mail you refills. That's probably pretty common now. I don't buy a lot of skincare products, so I don't really know.
It's common, but it's like the outer casing is this big plastic thing, and they're very proud that this smaller plastic thing inside it is the refillable thing. And you're like, well, maybe just do away with the big plastic thing.
Yeah, like— exactly. Exactly. So it's just kind of stuff like that, that, you know, it's just so hard for any, you know, I've reported on this in fashion. I think the same is true for beauty. Like, no new product is truly sustainable because the beauty industry is not planting trees. Neither is the fashion industry. They're taking resources from the planet to make their products, and then they're employing fossil fuels to ship those products out, or, you know, fly ingredients to their factory or whatever it is that they're doing.
I found it very difficult as an editor working in magazines to pitch any kind of story about sustainability or less is more or anything in this world, because it flies in the face of advertisers, consumerism.
Yeah.
Did you ever come up against that?
I personally don't recall that being the case, but when I was working in magazines or for other publications, it wasn't as big of a topic. So it might partly be that, but I do remember when I was at Cosmo.
The pile of ocean trash, the floating trash island was not as big then. It wasn't. We just didn't care about it.
It just wasn't quite talked about as much.
It wasn't chic. It wasn't like high fashion to talk about the dirty underside.
Yeah, I just think it wasn't. I think people weren't looking quite as hard at these claims and thinking quite as deeply about what they meant, even if they were just lip service and that was obvious. It just wasn't as, you know, it was an urgent issue, but it wasn't talked about online in the same way. You know what I mean? So I don't recall that we were like doing a lot of stories about it, and probably we should have been. I do recall doing some stories about, because I'm kind of obsessed with individual action versus policy when it comes to environmentalism and sustainability. And I tend to err on the public policy side, that, you know, the way to really save our planet is going to come through policy, less so individual action.
Yeah.
Although I do believe individual action is important virtue signaling for politicians. So that said, I did assign a story that was Signs You're Not the Environmentalist You Think You Are for Cosmopolitan, and it did really well.
I love that. I love that. Yeah, no, listen, if I buy, you know, a straw that's made of metal, I don't think that like, I've done it, you know, I don't think that I'm the one who's keeping... I don't think I'm going to make the change in the world. I totally agree with you. I don't know. I think I've just always found this topic really challenging to get through anyway.
But yeah, no, the thing is with publications, like they're there to sell product. They're a conduit from the fashion and beauty industries to the general public. They're there to sell us things. And they do that in different ways. They do that through fashion editorials. They do that through covers where a celebrity is wearing a Dior dress. They do it now so commonly all the time through online shopping posts, you know, just like, you know, the 10 loafers you need this fall or whatever it is. And they make money from purchases. I think consumers are becoming quite savvy to that they know if they click to buy something from Vogue.com, Vogue is going to earn money from that. So it is in the interest of publications to sell us stuff. And I know from my experience working in magazines that advertisers are looking, I'm sure you guys know this as well, advertisers are looking to see that the marketing they did in a magazine actually worked. Mm-hmm. So it's in the interest of the magazine to show that they're able to sell things to their readers.
Yeah, but I also think people are smart. And I think they can tease out an article that's like, hey, these are the best ones. I don't know. I think people can handle two concepts at once. I don't know. Sorry, but getting off topic.
Oh, I think you're right. And I think to come back to something we were talking about earlier, like I think that that's why it's going to be such a hard decade for media, because consumers are so savvy and they don't really, you know, accept the bullshit anymore. And I think that's kind of like the TikTok effect, where people are unafraid to go on TikTok and just say whatever they think about a brand or whatever they think about an article. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's different from the environment that we've had really on Instagram. Very different.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee and you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem, sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly.
When it comes to style and luxury, eBay gets it. They're making sure the things that you love are checked by experts. Not just any experts, specialized experts. Real people who love this stuff with real hands-on authentication experience.
So when you see that shiny blue checkmark that says Authenticity Guarantee, shop with confidence. Every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is verified authentic through a detailed inspection. That's how you know that eBay's got your back.
Because when you finally step into those sneakers, put on that watch, get your real gold glow up, swing that handbag over your shoulder, or step out in that streetwear, you'll realize that feeling is unlike any other.
With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
Let's flip it and not talk about top down and who these gatekeepers and media are, but the consumers, the people, the lovers of fashion and beauty themselves, who are they looking to now? I mean, the three of us are deep in it, so we think about it from our point of view, but who are they looking to be find their beauty influences and their fashion influences? Is it still celebrities? Is it more like TikTok influencers? Or I'm sorry, I should call them content creators.
Is it the Kardashians? Do they still have stock? No, I'm serious.
I think so. Yeah. I think it's all of the above, personally. I don't know if you guys agree with me, but I think it's the Kardashians. I think it's all celebrities. I mean, we see images of celebrities wearing stuff all the time, and it's talked about all the time. And I think it's also the creators on social media, on TikTok, on Instagram,
Who is a creator? Is a creator like, you know, somebody with 150,000 followers, or is it somebody with? What does it take to be a creator now? Is it somebody with like fewer, or like who is a creator in your eyes?
I think everybody who makes content for social media is a creator, truly. I know people who have fewer than 20,000 Instagram followers who sell a lot of products to their followers. I know people on TikTok who have 100,000 who do the same thing. I think there's a real range of like influence correlation to size of following, you know, like some, I guess what we would call micro influencers or nano influencers are very effective.
But I'm curious also, does this mean that you guys both named the Kardashians because they still seem to be like everybody knows who they are, but there's this nicheification happening with our, you know, we live in our own little echo chambers of the style and beauty that we like. And sometimes somebody names a celebrity and I'm like, I have no idea who that is. And how would you if you weren't on like the certain vertical of Twitter that's like my Twitter vertical with my people? Do you think that means that there'll be fewer trends in the future? Like we're not going to see these mass, like everybody is doing baggy sweatpants or whatever it is.
Wait, who is a celebrity? Can you think of one who you didn't know?
That like everybody would, that I don't know, you mean?
Yeah. Can you think of an example? I'm just curious. I'm sure that happens to me
like,
all the time,
The Try Guys? I don't know. Oh, there was like some drama with the Try Guys and his divorce. And I was like, who the Try Guys
were either, Jen. I'm with you.
Well, clearly, you know, I'm not their audience.
Amy, did you know who and the Try Guys are?
Okay, I did, but only because I worked at BuzzFeed for a year and a half, I think, when they were starting.
Well, there you go. But like algorithmically, you know, our lives are driven by these things. You like this, here's more of the same or whatever it is. Like, I don't have control as much over the search. So like, they never entered my purview until, I guess, like maybe CNN or some like mainstream media was writing about the guy's divorce and affair. But my point being, like, this happens all the time, right?
Yeah.
Like, you might have a best friend and like have no idea that they're in this like whole beauty little world, like clean girl aesthetic only. And those are the influencers that they're into. And you might not have no idea that like other things are going on. Do you think that's going to affect the way fashion designers, brands that are doing makeup like trends, like put out their work?
That's such a good question. I feel like we're in a trend saturation moment right now. And that's not an original thought. That's been written about, I think, a fair amount lately and talked about a fair amount lately, where I think that people were seeing a lot of traction around naming TikTok trends or trends that originated on TikTok. And so they were writing about them kind of endlessly. And that's where we got Coastal Grandmother and all of these, you know, I can't even think of all of them.
Oh, well, we have beauty examples. We have gym lips. We have passport photo makeup. We have W blush. Like, they're things that we've seen before, but now they have a name.
So I'm behind. What are gym lips?
Oh, my God. Gym lips are nude lip liner with lip gloss. Oh. Gym lips are literally just nude lip gloss.
Okay.
Pumped up lips.
But you wear them to the gym.
Okay.
It's so funny you say this, because like in our world, it has been an ongoing theme for the last 2 months, the giggles that we get over
okay,
this.
Okay, so but you guys will have to tell me how I can learn about these things at the same time as you, because I want to know about gym lips.
But it's such silliness.
Here's the thing,
though.
You're in your own world on TikTok, but our stuff you don't see about it, where I think 20 years ago.
Yeah, that's weird.
Right, but you have to search it out. It takes work now, because otherwise you're just going to be fed more of what you already see. Whereas 20 years ago, you were getting a broader view and then you could dive deeper into
like
the trends.
Everybody's
that you
in liked. Their own, I guess is what you're saying now. It's like everyone is like in their own tiny world. There's like no shared experience anymore. Like we all are like living in the same, like,
does that bother you, Amy?
I feel like there is shared experience, I guess. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong.
Where?
I feel like there is. Well, I guess maybe because I do still read like Vogue and Vogue.com and the New York Times. And I guess I read them less and less, actually, now that I'm thinking about it. Maybe I'm proving myself wrong. I don't know. I feel like there are still trends, you know, that we see like on the runways, for instance, cargo pants, you know, they were all over like.
I never
or bleached
got rid
brows.
Of that trend.
I mean, bleached yes. brows okay, that one, has no. come into my world.
But I wouldn't say that's a shared.
Are you going to do it?
It's not a like shared universal experience.
No,
but like
it's
a lot
not.
Of shows.
But I know
these
about
spring
it.
Shows. Yeah,
I do
it
know
came
about
up again
it.
And again. Yeah,
I think like for instance, I do think there's sort of like a what would the word for it be? It's like an umbrella trend, and then kind of micro trends that logically stem from it. Mm-hmm. Right now, we're in a big Y2K moment, mm-hmm. And I think that's kind of influencing everything, and I think that's going to continue probably at least for another season or two.
Yeah,
but I do think you're right. I do think you're right, though. You know that we are seeing. The things that we want to see. And I think that there's going to be ways that that's good and ways that that's bad. You know, I think this has been the problem with social media for a long time. And this is not just a fashion and beauty thing, but like, you know, people in politics, people see the things that they agree with or the things that completely enrage them. And that obviously doesn't lead to like the healthiest national discourse.
No, not at all.
Yeah. Speaking of trends that were sort of omnipresent, 10 years ago it was like athleisure, the wellness thing was huge. Do you see that as still a big part of the beauty and fashion conversation?
I think so. Do you guys?
I think it's part of the conversation, but I definitely think in the past year or so, there's been like a skepticism of the wellness industry. You know, I think there's definitely been you know, please tell me you listen to Maintenance Phase.
I love Maintenance Phase. It's fucking brilliant. They're brilliant.
Amazing podcast. Again, more niche. This is not part of the, you know, national discourse, though it should be, instituted in every health class. But it's, you know, it's raising an eyebrow to, you know, not necessarily wellness culture, but diet culture. But they, you know, they question a lot of quote unquote wellness habits. They just did an amazing episode on Goop and, you know, kind of questioning some of the wellness, you know, trends that have become sort of accepted or like adopted by people. So especially, I think a lot of, you know, people who may not, might be their first intro into wellness and questioning what wellness is. So I don't know. I've always kind of thought that wellness, and listen, I read Goop. I'm a fan of a lot of things that Goop has done, and they've normalized a lot of like sexual wellness and stuff around that that whole conversation. So I applaud a lot of what they've done, but I think just wellness, like it's kind of funny that it's couched in like the fashion beauty world. I'm not anti wellness. I'm not anti going to the spa or going to a doctor or getting a massage. I've talked about it like ad nauseum on this podcast, but I don't know. I do think there's kind of been a little bit of a question mark over a lot of wellness practices recently.
Well, the perfect example is those shoes. Like these shoes that like you have to like break your back to wear them. The new like platforms are back. How many models wiped out at the spring fashion shows? Like truly.
That is painful.
Not a wellness thing. What's your take on that? Tell everybody about the return of dangerous shoes, please.
Okay, so at the Valentino show in Paris this season, spring 2023, the shows that just wrapped up, the designer, who is, I think, widely regarded as quite good at what he does, Pier Paolo, he cast unknown models because he wanted people to see them as individual people, I'm paraphrasing, and not, you know, judge them based on their rank in the industry. And they had to wear shoes that I think must have been poorly made because so many of them couldn't walk in them. And there were reports of these young women in tears on the runway. There was ample video footage of them unable to walk, falling down and taking off their shoes to get down the runway. And I think the layout of the runway was also very confusing. So models were kind of like walking in different directions. And it was just heartbreaking to see these young girls who, you know, this is like their big chance to break out as a runway model. And they're having this embarrassing experience. It was sad. But there were actually more extreme looking shoes, I think, at other shows. So Valentino did have the very high platform heels, but they also had, I think, just some standard pumps. But the flat form, the thick, thick platform has been everywhere.
Do you find those easy to walk in?
I would not, you know, I would not wear those. I have a four-year-old. I don't think I could. I have a four-year-old and 1.5-year-old. And since I had kids, my body is different and I really can barely wear heels. So I can barely wear anything actually, but a sneaker. So these trends.
Love a sneaker. You know,
I just can't. I get back aches. Like, you know, I wish that this wasn't what happened to me, but it's just my life now. So I wear flats or sneakers. I'm not going to be wearing these shoes. I don't have really anywhere to wear them anyway. But you know what? Like designers are trying to revive that sort of roaring 20s type feel in fashion because we've been home in a pandemic wearing athleisure and sweatpants. And I think there's this.
You think that's culturally what's going on here? We're swinging back to.
Well, I think fashion is trying to swing us back to that. And I think to a degree, we will, because people are going to go to parties again. They're going to go to charity fundraisers again. Like all those things that weren't happening will happen. But I do also think that we are more casual. We are permanently more casual. And I don't know. I think that people are buying this stuff, though. There's that other shoe brand that I forget with like the big sparkly bows. I'm sorry. The name escapes me.
Matcha Match?
Is that it? Maybe. There's a couple of them. Anyway, yeah, I know that people are buying this stuff. And I did a story actually for Fast Company not that long ago about an evening wear shortage, but that's also partly a supply chain issue. Like if you were going to try to buy an evening gown in the spring, it was really hard because there wasn't that much stock and a lot of people were, you know, going to weddings and things. So I think that the pent up demand will die down. But yeah, I do think that the fashion industry is trying to capitalize on this feeling like we've emerged and we are going to get dressed up again and we're going to be glamorous and do our makeup and get new shoes. And I think to a degree that's going to happen, but I don't know. I think a lot of people don't really feel so much joy in the current world that we live in. And yeah. I don't think, you know, the pandemic is still going on. There's so many issues that are, I think, weighing on, you know, sociopolitical issues that weigh on people every day. And I just don't think that like new shoes are going to allow us to escape all of that. Yeah. So I think there's a bit of a disconnect between that attitude, which like I appreciate and I want things to be that way. And I want to get dressed up and I want to enjoy getting dressed up. But there's still, you know, the reality that like the world is kind of in a dark place. If you know, a lot of us feel that way.
To that point, everyone is talking about the recession. Depends on who you talk to. They either say it's looming, but I think it's fair to say it's here. So where do you think beauty fits into this?
What does the lipstick index say that people will buy makeup when they aren't buying other things? Is that what it is? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's kind of like bulletproof.
Yeah, maybe we'll see that. People are making a lot of video now. And I think people are going to do their hair and makeup to make those videos. So, you know, and you don't necessarily need a whole outfit for that if you're going to just be a talking head, which, is, you know, I make those videos all the time. But beauty tends to be more resilient, right? And a lot of the fashion companies have just come out with beauty lines, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. There's been a bunch of new ones. Dolce & Gabbana is one, right? If I'm not mistaken.
Dolce & Gabbana had a beauty line. It went bye-bye.
I mean, Valentino and Hermes are still relatively new, sure. Yeah.
Hermes Beauty is killing it.
Yeah, there you go. So I think that, you know, I don't know. I mean, would they launch these lines to capitalize on that or capitalize on a boom, I'm assuming, you know, because the battle with launching a beauty line is having the brand, right? And they already have the brand, so they may as well do the beauty line.
Yeah, that's a really great point.
What are some of your brands, Amy? You are a beauty consumer. I see your eyes and I'm thinking, I wish I could do eyeshadow like that.
Shadow's beautiful.
The palette is, oh my God, what is it? It is an amazing palette. I've had it forever. I think I got it when I was working on a story for free and it has like, it's all like browns and grays and it works very well for me. And then Lancome mascara, I'm very devoted to the Anastasia brow pencil, mm-hmm. Anastasia Beverly Hills brow mm-hmm. pencils.
Yeah. Oh, it's just a good one.
I use a NARS blush, mm-hmm. I think RMS concealer. Mm-hmm. RMS is a brand. Mm-hmm. See, I don't even pay attention to these brands.
Yeah, that's okay.
No, and you're naming like what I would call, it's funny how we were talking about legacy media and stuff. These are legacy beauty brands that you're naming. Like, yeah.
Yeah, and I don't buy new stuff that often because I don't wear it that often. I like the Stila liquid eyeliner pens. I like... Mm-hmm.
Did you get in on this whole skincare thing that has been huge for the last 2 years?
Bother with that because I don't have time. And actually,
you wash your face, Amy?
I wash my face. I use Cetaphil from the drugstore mm-hmm. and I use Neutrogena moisturizer.
Yeah, I like it. I like it. You're a busy guy.
And I have psoriasis, so I use Vanna cream. Like I use a ton of Vanna cream.
Okay.
Which my friend, when a close friend who's a dermatologist was like, just you need that. Just don't use anything else.
Does it work for you? Because psoriasis is tough.
Psoriasis is horrible. I've done light therapy. I've done the creams. Like it is a really annoying problem. But the light therapy worked for me. And I was going, after I had my daughter, I was going twice a week to get light therapy. And it was a huge time suck, but it was really bad because when you're pregnant, psoriasis is suppressed due to your immune system.
The hormone, yeah.
And then after you have your baby, you get like a really bad flare. Gosh. So I don't know. It's like in my 30s, it came out and it's been very aggravating, but I'm hoping I can get through the winter without having to go back to light therapy. But anyway, for those of you who don't know that much about psoriasis, you're supposed to stay moisturized. So that's why I use the Vanna cream and stay away from like fragranced products. So I think that's why I just use these sort of like inexpensive.
You can't be messing around too much.
Yeah, like I never put anything with fragrance on my skin because I just have this sensitive skin. So.
Okay, before we let you go, we're just going to have a quick Fat Mascara 5, fast, fast, fast lightning round, okay?
Okay.
Super fast. What was the first beauty product you fell in love with? Shadow.
I'm trying to remember the name. It was like a sparkly gloss. I feel like we all had it when we were in sixth grade.
Lip Smackers? Bonnie Bell?
Lip Smackers. Okay.
All right. I got you. Okay. What's your biggest eye roll in fashion? Jen and I, our biggest eye roll is when somebody tells us something is clean or sustainable, because we just know that, like, that's everybody now.
It means nothing.
Oh, I think fashion claiming that they love women of all shapes and sizes.
And do they really or not really?
No, I don't think so. Some people, I'm sure some people do, but in general, no, I don't think so.
Who is the designer that you think their clothes are actually really worth it?
Altuzarra.
Okay. That show was so good. I was obsessed with all of it.
I love Joseph Altuzarra's clothes. I love his stuff. It's so good.
What is your favorite fashion movie?
Devil Wears Prada.
Duh. And we're all reading Anna the biography this winter, if you haven't read it already.
I already read it. I read it on vacation this summer. And I was like, my favorite part was the footnotes. I'm not going to lie. Because then I went searching for, like, who told her that?
Heavy footnotes.
Who told her that?
Heavy footnotes.
And I love a fact check, guys. You know I love a fact check. And Amy did her fact checking.
Okay. And in the movie of your life, who would narrate it?
David Attenborough.
Oh, my God.
We're kindred, Amy. We're kindred.
That's what Jen said for her.
Oh, excellent.
We can see you creeping around on your dangerous shoes and David just being like, here's Amy reporting from the sidelines.
Yes, exactly. It'll be a woman in the wild wearing an outfit.
Wearing Altuzarra. Yeah.
Getting attacked, going, encountering predators and hiding behind signs on the street.
Amy, are you going to write another book?
Fashion and beauty.
Are you going to write another book?
Yeah. We'll see.
Amy, thank you so much. You're incredible.
Thank you guys so much for having me. Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed the show. It's your reviews and feedback that help us make the podcast even better. Head over to iTunes to rate and review us or email your thoughts to info@fatmascara.com.
We also want to answer your beauty questions and hear what products you love. To share a Raise a Wand product review or to ask a beauty question, email us at info@fatmascara.
If you send it as a voice memo file, we can even share your voice on the podcast. You can also do that by leaving us a voice message. Our phone number in the United States is 646-481-8182.
Thanks so much for listening.